The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
The plethora of available options can make our health decisions complicated. Welcome to Murmuration, Critical Transitions and Transformation with Stacey Starling. Our program is designed for you to question, take charge of your health, and find out which resources in healthcare and human services are available for you. Now, here's your host, Stacey Starling.
Welcome, and thank you for listening. This is your host, Stacey Starling. You're listening to Murmuration, Critical Transitions and Transformation. Today, we're adding to the conversation about person-centered approaches in healthcare and human services. This particular topic has a rich history within the provider environment and is front and center in the healthcare reform conversation. Today's guests, Wendy Middleton and Terry Cady, are experts in the person-centered approach in the Disability and Aging Services Network. Wendy is Director of Program and Partnership Development Division at the Michigan Offices of Services to the Aging. Wendy leads OSA's effort to integrate person-centered planning into the Aging Network and works in developing Michigan's Emerging Aging and Disability Resource Collaboratives. You can reach Wendy at Middleton, M-I-D-D-L-E-T-O-N-W, at Michigan.gov. Terry is the Community Education and Outreach Director for Disability Network Mid-Michigan and has worked to create independent facilitation as an option, as a real option for person-centered planning throughout Michigan since 2005. You can visit the Disability Network of Mid-Michigan at www.dnmichigan.org or contact Terry at 800-782-4160. Remember to visit us at starlingcenter.org. Like us at Starling Center on Facebook, connect with me on LinkedIn, add us on Google Plus, or follow me on Twitter. All these links can be found below our show links. If you have any questions about the show, email me at radio@starlingcenter.org, or please email at any time during the show if you have questions that you would like addressed in our last segment. Again, that email address is radio@starlingcenter.org. And to correspond with me directly, email Stacey, S-T-A-C-E-Y, at starlingcenter.org. We are going to begin our show with Wendy Middleton. And Wendy, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yes, I'd like to start out today's show by talking a little bit about person-centered and what that means. Can you share with our listening audience what person-centered means?
Well, actually, I'm going to suggest that Terry answer that question because we learned everything we know about person-centered from the disability community. So I think you might want to have her answer that and then I can chime in.
That will be fantastic. Thanks so much. All right, Terry, what can you share with us about what person-centered means?
Well, really, it's about supports and services being designed around an individual's preference. So the person is really the focus. And I know that sounds simple, but in many of our service settings, it's a supportive or a system that's in place that really dictates what happens in somebody's life. And person-centered, you know, instead of focusing on a menu of services, for example, our approach starts with the individual.
Tell me more about that and why anybody should really be concerned about the services that they're receiving being person-centered. It seems to be a buzzword. I hear it out there all the time in both the aging and the disability service network.
Well, it really is sort of a way of providing service. And since we serve people, it's really, in my opinion, impossible to provide excellent supports without the person being a part of the equation. So you're right. There's been this growing demand in a variety of settings from individuals who really want to play a more active role in decision-making about the supports that they receive. So although it's not really a new concept, systems are starting to respond to that demand. So making the shift from global supports to individualized supports has really taken time. So changes are happening, and good things have come out of those changes. I think that individuals report greater satisfaction when they're actively engaged in the planning of supports and services. And that's also led to, you know, greater outcomes. So when we look at the successes that people have in their lives, they're bigger and better when we use a person-centered approach.
You made a couple of comments there that I'd like to have a greater understanding of. You talked about global versus individual supports. Help me understand what that means.
Well, it's really looking at how we do what we do from an individual perspective rather than a larger system perspective. And, you know, many of our supports over time have sort of taken that global picture. And so, golly, how do you provide individualized services when everybody's different? And person-centeredness really embraces that notion that people can be a part of designing those supports and services.
When you say global, is it more like, you know, the one-size-fits-all approach?
Yeah, definitely. Yep, definitely.
Okay. And then talk to me about outcomes. You use the term outcomes. What does that mean in a person's life when we're talking about outcomes?
Really focusing on things that somebody wants to achieve. So, and it covers the whole gamut. I mean, some folks are, you know, looking at improving healthcare. Some folks are looking at setting some individual goals, maybe in, you know, what they want to learn or accomplish in their life. And so, you know, when I think about how that plays out within a system, systems are typically designed to do, you know, X, Y, or Z. And people have lots of goals in their lives that may be within a system or not be. But I think when people, like I said, are involved in sharing what they want for their life and are supported when they share what it is they want, they actually reach a little bit farther. And so we've seen that in places that person-centered approaches have been used where, like I said, successes in people's lives are bigger than they even initially thought.
It sounds as if this has been a common approach for many years. Can you give us or connect us with the rich history of person-centered?
Well, I think many elements of person-centered approaches have evolved within the disability community over time. And so when I think about the independent living movement as a whole, for example, person-centered concepts really led the charge for change in many of our support systems. So people standing up saying, hey, I want something better for my life or for my loved one, has really shifted some of that culture. So those kinds of rumblings we've really been hearing for decades. You know, our closing of institutions is a really good example of that. People saying over time, I don't want this any longer. So as individuals began to move into community settings, for example, the sharing of ideas about what was an important part of creating opportunities to live independently successfully really became a part of the conversation. So there's a historic, I guess, a mantra, if you will, in the disability community, nothing about us without us. And person-centered approaches really embrace that concept. So as a structure, person-centered planning, for example, was recognized as a best practice and built into the Michigan Mental Health Code in probably 96. But again, some of those concepts really came out of the disability community even decades before.
You know, I love that idea. Nothing about us without us. That's fantastic. Wendy, maybe you could chime in at this point. It was adopted into the Michigan Health Code in 1996. Perhaps you can help us to appreciate how the disability community and aging services are connected in this this movement.
Sure. There have been a number of federal grants that the state has received regarding long-term care reform. And in the early 2000s and up till present day, there have been specific grants that were aimed at looking at how long-term supports and services are planned and delivered. And embedded in those grants was the desire at the federal government level to incorporate person-centered approaches and models and values and essential elements and that sort of thing. So we've been working with the disability community for quite a long time now, and already knew that they were heavily invested in person-centered and that it's foundational to the work they do. So we have learned from them over the years and are working hard to reform the aging network so that it comes from a person-centered foundation. And it is a culture change, and it does take time. And what's been really interesting is to figure out where the aging and disability communities have similarities and where they have differences. And one of the major differences is oftentimes when working with folks with disabilities, they're younger and they have life plans and they're moving along. And so the support provided is more global as and more touches more parts of their lives. And unfortunately, when a person gets older, in our culture, we have a declinist view. Everything's going downhill. It's all about loss. And we tend to then only think about older adults as people with health care needs. So if I'm an older adult, I'm just a collection of health care needs. And so the change mm-hmm. to person-centered for our network has been more about, we need to look at a person holistically because they're not just trying to improve their health for their health's sake necessarily. They're trying to figure out how am I going to live my life now and what do I need to do to support the things I want to do with my life regardless of my age. But that the ageist view that we have in our culture tends to support the here's the system and here's how we can take care of your health care needs, but not really delve into why are these health care needs even important to you and what are you trying to accomplish with your life. So
sure.
It's been a different kind of a journey. It's one I think that we're making really good progress on, but it is there are slightly different issues, between the two networks. But we talk about it all the time, so we work together on this.
That's great. I appreciate that. Some of the things that you talked about, it being culture change, we're going to talk about that more in the next segment because I want to have a greater understanding of this notion of culture change. But setting us up, we have a few minutes before we go to break, setting us up before we do head into our next segment. Can you perhaps help us connect with the difference? Because I also hear out there in the provider network, patient-centered or patient-directed. How does that differ from a person-centered approach, Wendy?
I think it is in the words, of the very words, person-centered versus patient-centered. If I use the word patient, you automatically get a stereotypical, picture in your mind of, oh, it's a person getting healthcare services, right? Or a person who has healthcare needs or someone who's sick or someone who needs something. And I realize that the healthcare world refers to people as patients, but that's their paradigm. If I say the word person, you can't really get a picture in your mind except of a person. You don't know what their wishes are, their desires, their needs. And that automatically means that there's a lot more conversation that has to go on to figure out what would be person-centered to them versus patient-centered. And I think this whole buzzword issue is, I think, really relevant right now. I've been involved in a couple different culture change efforts. And in the beginning, the frontiers are using the language and they are wedded to the cause in a more pure way. And then folks come along and, the feds want person-centered now. Well, in our network, we're going to call it something else, and we're going to try to do it. But I think having worked with folks from the healthcare world, it's really difficult in an acute care situation or setting or where, the folks that work in those settings to get them to be able to really understand the difference between person-centered and patient-centered. Patient-centered tends to be, it's all about the patient. But person-centered is more person-directed, and it's all about the person directing how things are going to happen and what they're going to get. And we still have a culture where doctors are all-knowing and all-saying. And,
yes.
Patients, me
yes.
as a person, we tend to, depending on your age, your relationship with your doctor, all that sort of stuff, they tend to be revered and their directions followed, rather than, wait a minute, I'm not sure that's going to work for me. But to me, it's always interesting because I always figure, when I'm at the doctor's office and they say, we want you to do this, and I think you should do that, and I nod, and I say, oh, yes, absolutely, that sounds great. And then I get in the car and drive home and think, I'm not doing that.
sounds like, to me, it sounds like you're talking about, that we have held up the practitioner as
right.
being the all-powerful, and we
right.
really defer our
right.
own voice sometimes in our experience. And maybe
exactly.
that's the distinction as well that you're speaking to between person-centered and patient-centered. Yeah. It also puts the practitioner in the paradigm of thinking of us as equals in the relationship. And
yeah.
that, it's just not our responsibility to follow their treatment plan, that we have a say in the
exactly.
treatment plan that we're yeah. wanting to plug into.
Well, and we have a saying in our network, and I think, Terry, you guys use this too, but I am the expert on me. I'm the only one who knows everything about me. So when decisions are to be made about my life, my healthcare choices, whatever it is, I'm the expert on who I am, and everyone else gives me advice, and then I decide or information, and then I decide the I make the decisions I'm going to make. So, yeah.
That's an important thing to keep in mind. And when we come back from break, I'd like to re-engage the conversation and talk a bit more about how we can tell if our provider is person-centered. And Wendy was bringing an important point up here just in the last few minutes around this idea of it, you know, being a human rights situation, and that we have the right to ask this of our providers and it be a relationship of equals. So please stay tuned and join us after our commercial break on the other side of 3 minutes.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
By making some important changes in your life, you can move forward from where you are to where you wish to be. It is becoming the change you want to see. It can be a sort of experiment, if you will. On Moving Forward, Wellness One Step at a Time, your host, Dr. Serena Wadhwa, will introduce you to ideas that can help improve your health, relationships, and finances. You probably have at least one part of your life that needs improving. Make an appointment now to join us every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. How is your health? Do you want to know more about it? Every day there are new technologies, procedures, and healing techniques coming forward. To understand them, tune in to Speaking of Health with Dr. Michael Cudlis. Our guests come from different backgrounds in the fields of health and healing. We'll discuss new realities and modalities, from chiropractic to metagenics. It's all designed to improve your quality of life. Speaking of Health is heard live every Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
You read about it in health news every day.
Cancer rates are going up. Obesity in the U.S. is on the rise. Heart disease and diabetes are top killers every year.
We can follow the advice of our doctor, but cravings persist. Weight goes up and energy is still down. It doesn't have to be like this. Tune in for Body Balance Talk with your host, Jeannie Schmidt, along with Lucy and Madeline. You'll learn how you can work with your body to feel better and look better, too. Body Balance Talk airs live every Friday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on Voice America Health and Wellness.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to Murmuration, Critical Transitions and Transformation with host Stacy Starling. If you have a question or comment for the show, please send an email to stacy@starlingcenter.org. Now, back to the show.
Thank you for listening. This is Stacy Starling, and you are joining us at Murmuration, Critical Transitions and Transformation. Prior to the break, we were talking about how you can tell if a provider is person-centered or not. And my guests, Wendy Middleton and Terry Cady, were offering their expertise within the Aging and Disability Network and helping us to understand the notion of person-centered services. I'd like to jump back into this idea of a provider being person-centered and how we can identify that. Let's start with Wendy, and then Terry, I'd like to hear your perspective on it as well. So let's start with Wendy, and we'll go from there.
Okay. In the Aging Network, what we're working with providers to do, our service providers, is to write it information assistance. When you first call in and you talk to someone, like at an area agency on aging or a local service provider, in the past, we had a tendency to just ask you a series of questions, just, you know, things that may or may not even be relevant to your particular situation, so we could get a picture of, okay, we think you need this service, or you need this service, or you need this service. Now we've changed how information and assistance is done so that it's more of a conversation where the person who is talking with you from the agency listens for, you know, information and triggers and may ask you additional questions, but doesn't just basically, like, interview you on the phone. Then when you are offered a referral to someone else to talk to, it's the same process. It's the conversation. Availability of person-centered planning is addressed at that point, and we can start one now, you can start one later, and we have a conversation about what's going on rather than in the past, we trained people very carefully to be able to quickly identify what a person's service needs were and then just, you know, say, I think you need this service, and this service, and let's move you right on to getting, you know, signed up for those things. Now, obviously, if somebody calls with an emergency, you take care of the emergency, and then you go back and you start the person-centered conversation. But if it's somebody calling seeking information about supports and services, it is a much different process than it used to be. And, you know, the notes that are written in this, sort of in the margins of those conversations are often more important than the service needs that are checked. And the notes are things like, you know, just having trouble taking care of the dog, getting the dog outside, or needs help with this or needs help with that. So the notes are as important, if not sometimes more important, the handwritten notes, than what's on the list of issues to be discussed.
Right, got it. And so, Terry, you have a lot of experience with individuals really at that point of service having what we consider a person-centered conversation. Talk to us about that and how that unfolds and the experience for the individual.
Well, I really like the fact that Wendy's mentioning the conversation, because so many of our services, we have begun from that assessment perspective. And, you know, when we start with the individual, I think the provider and the person just are on the same page from the get-go. And so really delving deeper into our conversations about what, not just what people need, but what people want. So, you know, when we talk with providers, you know, and wondering if they're person-centered in their service provision or not, sometimes you can feel it. I mean, when supports are offered from that person-centered perspective, even the way a provider goes about describing their own services is different. And the focus is on individual preferences, reaching goals, satisfaction, all things that are important to the provider also. But you hear things, you know, instead of, you know, needs or deficits, more focused on flexibility and creativity and hope even. So much more focus is put on what a person can do. And it's empowering, I think, when providers look for ways that a person can contribute to the positive outcomes in their own life and not simply on needs. So there are some things that, you know, that we look for in regard to the way that plans are created, for example. But person-centered approaches can be seen really in the day-to-day happenings and how supports are provided. It's intentional and really engages that person in conversation throughout their services.
You talk about the things that we look for, positive things that people contribute in their life. Talk to me a little bit more about that, because I'm not sure that I've had that experience in a provider environment yet, which is not to say that it hasn't happened. I just haven't noticed it. And so give me some concrete examples of what that conversation sounds like.
Well, it might be engaging folks in what pieces or parts of accomplishing a task or an activity, you know, during the day might be. You know, oftentimes we think about the end goal in someone accomplishing something, but really the meat of the matter for most of us is in the steps along the way. And so folks might not be able to, you know, do certain things for themselves any longer, but can contribute to moving in that direction. So let's say that I am not able to prepare my meals any longer, but I really wish, you know, that's something that's of value to me. It's something that I have enjoyed doing, and there are, you know, maybe some supports that can help me do that throughout the day. So what parts, because there's lots of steps in, you know, preparing a meal or, you know, having someone over to dinner. And so in what ways can I contribute? What's important to me in helping make those decisions? And really the provider thinking about not just getting the task done, but what parts of those steps I can contribute to, whether it's picking out the food, whether it's, you know, going to the store, whether it's, you know, setting the table and getting the placemats and the decorations ready, even the invitation if you're inviting someone over. So just lots of ways that people can still be connected to what's really going on in their life.
Wow, I so appreciate that example that brought so many things right to the forefront of my mind as I'm reflecting on someone's quality of life and their ability to be a full participant in life, right? And some of the things that you talked about led me to have a better appreciation for this is really about the process, not just the outcomes that we're seeking to experience in life, but the process. How do we get there? What are those steps? And how do we get to be a co-participant in all of those steps that when we are healthy and young, we may take for granted? And you're just illuminating the important contributions in our social system or within our network of living life differently. Is that an accurate reflection of some of the things that are so important to person-centeredness within the disability network?
I think it's absolutely, absolutely pivotal that we think about those day-to-day things. And, you know, again, as providers, sometimes we do have goals, and individuals set goals for themselves that feel far away. But when we use person-centered concepts in our day-to-day work, it's really about somebody establishing a lifestyle that they choose and that being supported. So, you know, rather than, I use the example sometimes, well, yes, I want a cup of coffee every morning, and if you give me a cup of coffee, I may not be pleased if it doesn't have cream and sugar. So it really, it does come down to the details and what's meaningful and valuable to the individual.
And as we look at this in a broader way, I mean, you've talked a lot about all of those things that are potential benefits, but how, in your working with individuals at the point of service, what do you hear from those individuals as a benefit to them? How would they describe it? I mean, we can talk all day about it from a service provider because that's our contribution in the world, but what has been your experience with individuals at the point of service? What feedback are you getting from them?
Thank you. That notion that that individuals have power back, have an opportunity to sort of reclaim their life. Sometimes when people come into a need of support in their life, they may feel like some of that is gone or taken from them. And person-centered approaches put that right back in the person's decision, given their decision-making power. And so, for many individuals, that's been unexpected because historically our service systems haven't engaged folks in that way. And so I think that's really part of the critical measure about what's working is, are we asking folks to choose from a set of services or are we really engaging them in problem solving, decision making, and really forecasting their own futures?
I love that notion, forecasting their own futures. You also coupled that with this idea of power. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, depending on how, a support system is set up, someone needs to make the decision. And, you know, Wendy alluded to earlier, I'm the best person, I'm the expert in my own life, I know me best. And so when decisions need to be made, usually there's more than one way to provide a service and more than one way to get something done. And it's empowering to have an opportunity to say, what option I want, what that looks like. And in many of our systems, we kind of take that for granted. We assume that there's a best practice and that's what everybody would want. And that's not always the case. And so when we take an opportunity to give that individual the power back, we really come up with some, not only some creative ways to do business, but some meaningful steps that the person is more likely to value and appreciate. And so, I think it's not only transformative for the individual's life, but also for the provider to know that what I'm doing is really of value, that the person really appreciates that. And every provider wants to have that notion.
I love that you also bring up this idea of transformation, that the provider, the relationship is transformative for the provider as well. Can you give us an example of your own experience of transformation in a relationship with an individual at the point of service?
I've had a variety of experiences, and I think a few of the most, if I can use the term transformative, happenings were in a group home setting and or a place where a person had support staff that came into their home. And often there's a plan of service that's developed to really help the staff figure out what to do. And, lots of times there, like I said, there are different ways to accomplish something. And so engaging the person in those kinds of conversations has been transformative, not only for staff and how they provide service, but for the individual to say, this is really what I would like that to look like. And so, you know, I can think about a few gentlemen who were, you know, hoping to obtain employment and, you know, really started in a volunteer opportunity, and the staff being able to be creative and finding volunteer opportunities in a community and being able to build on those kinds of things. So rather than going through a system structure and involving the staff, the individual identifying what it was they wanted to do, and then really giving it a try. And
yes.
Go ahead.
It sounds like you're also talking about perhaps there was some reshaping of their ideas around how they should engage or how they should support the individuals as well. So as we talk about providers or staff and their transformative moments, perhaps some of that is also, you know, reexamining how they think they should engage or what their role is in supporting somebody. And it sounds like that might be some of the transformation that might be unfolding before us.
I think within systems we're seeing that, you know, knowing that we're shifting from that, you know, clinician as expert. And when we look at person-centered approaches involving other supports that are in someone's life, so I used that support staff example years ago. Support staff weren't a part of that conversation and really are intimately involved in, you know, what happens day to day. And so from my perspective, really should be an active part of that conversation. And so we're seeing that shift within systems as well.
That's fantastic. You've just brought to our attention that it's not just the individual that may be providing one aspect of that care or that support and service. It's the entire social system that's surrounding that individual and how everyone can contribute to looking at the bigger picture and making sure that we all are attentive to how we support those valued life outcomes to come into form and what role we have in the process. Thank you so much. We're going to move to break now. And when we return from break, we're going to take a look at or talk about how person-centered is emerging within the aging network.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Cancer is not something to be taken lightly, but instead of being talked at by doctors, medical providers, and others, wouldn't it be nice to hear from a host who has worked at the Cancer Coalface for 38 years as a caregiver, supporter for 14,000 patients, and who has had the experience of having a life-threatening condition herself? You will hear the stories of survivors and other people who work in breakthrough cancer medicine. Navigating the Cancer Maze with host Grace Galler will help you with the facts, planning, and grief experienced with different forms and stages of cancer. Listen every Friday at 12 noon U.S. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Think of the world 50 years ago. Now think of this same world and how it'll be 50 years from now. Did you know that if the world's population continues to grow at its current rate, our children and grandchildren will only have 25% of the resources per capita that our parents and grandparents had? We must preserve the foundation of a quality standard of living. That foundation starts with Go Green Radio. Join your host, Jill Buck, for Go Green Radio every Friday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America.
Do you know that over 70% of Americans with severe disabilities are unemployed? Are you one of the 2.5 million Americans with epilepsy? If you are, or know someone struggling with these issues, tune in to Disability Matters with Joyce Bender. On the show, Joyce will discuss these issues as well as others. She will have on nationally known guests that will offer helpful insight on disability matters and let you, the listener, call in with your questions and concerns. So if you struggle with a disability or know someone who does, listen to Disability Matters with Joyce Bender. Heard every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time here on VoiceAmerica.com.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to Murmuration, Critical Transitions and Transformation with host Stacy Starling. If you have a question or comment for the show, please send an email to Stacy@starlingcenter.org. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. This is your host, Stacey Startling, and you're listening to Murmuration, Critical Transitions and Transformation. Today, we're talking about person-centered approaches within the Aging and Disability Network, and my guests, Wendy Middleton and Terry Cady, are joining me. We're going to transition and talk about aging services and a person-centered approach within the aging network. Wendy, I'm wondering if you can share with us some of the historical threads around how long we've seen person-centeredness within the aging network and where we're at today with it.
Before I answer that question, I want to touch on something that Terry was talking about. And as she was talking, which I really enjoyed listening to and need to talk to her more often, what I was thinking was when we do training on person-centered thinking, we talk a little bit about because of funding availability and time available to everybody, and from Michigan, this is ironic, we tend to do things in an auto mechanic mentality, an auto building mentality. How can we make this the most efficient system possible so that, you know, when you talk to me, you get this, and then you go on to the next person, and you get the next part, and it so does not allow for a person-centered experience. And I understand why we have done it that way and why work has been broken down that way, but it doesn't really work well for people because that's not how we live our lives and that's not how we want to think about our lives. I mean, if everybody got up every day and said, first I will do this and then I will do that, and then there was no spontaneity, variety, no opportunity to sort of sit back and think about what's the bigger picture here, why am I doing this, how is it contributing to my happiness and my life quality, it would be a very dull life. So, to me, person-centered is more approaching how we just approach our life on a regular daily basis, but then we sort of, you know, smack up against this service delivery system or this healthcare system that wants to grind us through this process. And so I think when she was talking about people saying thank you, that's our experience too, because what we're hearing from folks that are experiencing a person-centered approach is, I was really surprised that they cared about, and in the Aging Network, the rest of my life and why I even wanted to do this thing. And also very happy with the outcomes, whether they reach their ultimate goal or not, because that changes over time. Just a more humanistic way of helping people figure out what they need in supports in order to live the kind of life they want to live. So,
what a novel approach, huh? A humanistic way. If we can experience our health and human services in a humanistic way, since we are humans receiving services from humans.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I am not criticizing the people who work in that system. You know, we as a culture have set up this system, and then we have told everybody this is how you operate in this system. And I'm also going to give a little credit to the boomers, because I think boomers are a group, and I'm a member of them, that have kind of looked at a lot of systems and said, this is not working for me. You know, we need to figure out how to do this. How come I can't go to the bank in the middle of the night if I want to? I mean, I can remember when you couldn't go to the bank or get any access to your funding unless it was between the hours of 8 and 5, you know, or 9 to 5. So I think there are a lot of things, a lot of different forces converging to make this the kind of the way people want to be helped and the way they want to interact with all of the systems that they deal with. So
I agree. I think, and you brought a couple of important points into the conversation where you referenced it's been efficient over the years. I think our entire system has been set up to be efficient in delivery, but not necessarily effective.
Right.
And what we know about efficiency and effectiveness is effectiveness comes first and efficiency follows. Otherwise, we're just producing really lousy outcomes really fast.
Right.
And yeah, and so I think, you know, turning that, flipping that perspective and focusing on efficiency first, or excuse me, effectiveness first, is so important at, you know, within our network.
Yep.
The other thing that you mentioned that I want to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about, because our listening audience might not understand, you referenced person-centered thinking here in the state of Michigan.
Right.
Talk a little bit about this initiative and the goals that you have for it and the process.
Well, we have experienced training folks in person-centered planning. And there was a grant in 2003, 2004 in that area to train folks who work in the Medicaid waiver program, which is a federally funded program that provides a nursing home level of care in a person's home so that they don't go to a nursing facility. So first they taught all of the waiver agents person-centered planning, and what we learned, because many of them were Aging Network folks, what we learned was that it was very difficult to make the shift from the clinical
to the more social. So we had to back up when we started training other people in the aging network. We had to back it up and say, okay, before I can give up control, or I can give a person their power to make their own decisions, we decided there needs to be a transformation process that folks go through where they can identify their own biases and how they impact working with people. And it's a 2-day training for folks who are going to be working directly with people in the aging network. And we've also provided training to folks in the independent living network, and then they have contributed to the training. So it's been a really good marriage between the two, so that I can have that experience. Because up till now, we've really rewarded people for the clinical knowledge. I know a lot about what the clinical aspects of aging and the healthcare issues and that sort of thing. So I get rewarded for being very good at that. Well, now I'm being asked to not know that or not provide that information, but I'm approaching it from a totally different perspective. So we offer that training to people who work in the field so that they can have the opportunity to change, to look at themselves and change how they think about it, and so they can be more successful when they're trying to approach serving folks and providing supports and services and even talking to people about supports and services in a person-centered way. And it's been really a really interesting process.
If people want to know more about that training, how can they be in contact with you?
They can email me at middletonw@michigan.gov.
Great, thank you. And we have about 2 minutes here before we're going to go to break again and engage in our last segment of the show. But prior to that, what does all of this really mean for people at the point of service? What should I expect when I go see somebody?
In our network, you should expect that you are going to be consulted from the very first moment about what can we do. But it's going to be geared from the perspective of what would you like to accomplish? What would you like to see happen? And what can we do to support you to make that happen? So it isn't just an automatic, let's take a look at your list of healthcare needs and boom, 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 go from there. And I think Terry alluded to this earlier. You actually talked directly about it earlier, that it's just a different approach at providing supports and services to people with their outcome in mind. And that's the other thing that I think is really important about the person-centered approach. Success is, do I think I met my goal? So I set my goal. If my goal is to be able to do a particular thing and the supports and services are there to help me reach that, I decide whether my goal has been reached or not, and I can change my goal at any time because it's a process, not a, one point in time, and then you never talk about it again. As things change, my plan changes. And I think that's really important, too, the way that we have measured success in the past and actually still do now, and we need to change that to more outcome-based evaluation, is did they get the services? Well, I may get the services that may not have helped me reach my goal, if anyone even asked me what my goal was. So I think that is probably the most important change that's happening right now. I determine my goal. I determine the success in reaching my goal.
Thank you. With that, we're going to head to break. And after we come back, we will address some frequently asked questions.
Steps to a healthier you. Voice America Health and Wellness.
What would you do if you knew that you could not fail? The Dr. Pat Show with Dr. Pat Basile is a radio forum for some of the world's most influential people in the fields of health, wellness, and human potential. Dr. Pat brings together and introduces visionary scientists and futurists, environmentalists, educators, business leaders, inventors, filmmakers, authors, artists, mystics, and healers who inspire and support individual and collective growth and positive cultural shifts. This award-winning radio show empowers the listening community to be the change they want to see in the world. Tune in every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific for the Dr. Pat Show with Dr. Pat Basile, radio to thrive by.
What sets apart VoiceAmerica.tv from the other video content providers on the internet? choice and flexibility means that you can host your video content live or on demand on the main VoiceAmerica.tv channels through your own branded media player or your own private TV channel. We support multiple media formats, so all of your video content can be in one place. We offer a number of advertising and video packages. For more information, visit VoiceAmerica.tv. If you think you've seen online TV like this before, let us surprise you.
Have you become a member yet? Sign up now to become a member of Voice America. It's always free and easy. Plus, you get to take advantage of some great member benefits. Get unlimited access to millions of hours of on-demand content across all of our channels. Keep track of your favorite episodes, shows, and hosts in your own customizable library. Find out what shows you might be interested in based on your favorites. Plus, you get insider access with our newsletter. Membership gives you more. Sign up at voiceamerica.com and click register at the top right.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to Murmuration, Critical Transitions and Transformation with host Stacy Starling. If you have a question or comment for the show, please send an email to stacy@starlingcenter.org. Now, back to the show.
Thank you for listening. You are listening to Murmuration, Critical Transitions and Transformation. This is your host, Stacy Starling. Today, we are talking about person-centered approaches in the Aging and Disability Network. And joining me today is Terry Cady and Wendy Middleton, my guests. We are in our last segment of the show, and we're going to address some frequently asked questions. And I'd like to start with Wendy. Talk to me a little bit about what people who live with dementia, how they experience person-centered planning and how it is a person-centered experience.
Okay. The way that we have provided training and also talked with folks who are out in the world assisting families with persons with dementia is that the person with dementia is included in the person-centered planning process. And what that means is that you may have to, it'll be different than a regular session, obviously, because the person with dementia, depending on where they are in the process of that dementia, may not respond traditionally, may communicate with behavioral cues, which family and loved ones and friends would know, but you still include the person in the person-centered planning process. And it's also, although we've had folks, support coordinators out there who talk about, you know, the person was bedridden and seemingly not communicative, but they still hold the session in the bedroom with the person present because it's about them and they need to be there to witness it and be involved in whatever way they can at that time.
Great. Terry, add to this conversation and share with us how that is similar or different for folks within the disability community, perhaps individuals who are unable to speak or unable to articulate what it is that they want or need.
Yeah, I think we actually are experience that a fair amount when individuals have a hard time saying what it is they want or have limited communication, formal communication, but really everybody has an opportunity to indicate their preference. So asking folks, you know, what they might like about a situation or how they, and we really can get some idea about what works for somebody or what does not. The image comes to mind of a basketball game where the basketball player might be on the bench part of the time, and other time they actually, you know, are actively running up and down the court. And so, and we all play different roles at different times. And so, sometimes we have to create creative ways for people to share their preference. And so that's, again, why we involve natural support. So it might be through the use of pictures. It might be through some simple yes, no. It might be actually taking someone to experience a situation or a location and see how it goes.
That's really interesting. And what leads me to wonder more about is, you know, are there specific tools that support that process?
As far as person-centered planning?
Yeah, talk a little bit about that. I don't think we've talked yet about the tool of person-centered planning, recognizing that it's not static, but I don't think we've flushed that out a bit.
Yeah, I think when we introduce person-centered thinking concepts into everyday, that's where we really see, like I said, the greater success. But many of our systems still want to, I guess, prove that we are utilizing person-centered approaches. And, you know, we need to develop a plan of service, really, so that folks know how to support someone, so that someone's wishes are captured and honored, and we've got a way to reflect on that. You know, Wendy already mentioned somebody could change their goal or their preference at any time, so it's important that we revisit that, that we have those conversations in an ongoing way. But the plan itself is often created, and there's lots of tools out there that can help facilitate that discussion, because we don't often have all the people at the table at the same time. And so taking advantage of that opportunity when we do really comes to some shared meaning, shared understanding about what a person wants in their life. And, you know, sometimes it's about supports in somebody's life, knowing that there are other supports available as well. And that's really where we find, again, individuals who are accomplishing more than they thought they could, just because the supports have come together and support each other.
Great. You know, so talking about that network of support, sometimes families can be over-involved or over-directive from a place of goodness, of course, the loved, you know, wanting to advocate for their loved one. Wendy, talk to me a little bit about that role and how the practitioner might handle this.
Yeah, that can be an issue for, especially for older adults, especially with adult children who don't live in town. They live out of state, and they get together, and, you know, they obviously, they just want to do the best that they can for their loved one. And oftentimes a parent doesn't want to upset their children by saying, I don't want that. And I remember one of the options counselors telling me a story about going to meet with a woman and her two children, her daughters, who were from out of town, actually out of state, both of them. They all got together. And so and in the conversation, the girls are having lots to say about the daughters, about what they think mom should get and what she needs and that sort of thing. And one of them gets a cell phone call, and the other one has to go to the restroom or something. And the woman, the mother, the older adult, you know, she puts her hand on the options counselor's arm and says, can you please help me? I don't want any of these things. So the options counselor can often serve in a role of making sure that the person who is, you know, seeking the supports and services, their voice is heard. And also through the person-centered planning process, the person who is seeking supports and services, they have the right to decide who is in that meeting. So there are lots of times I know from experiences talking to options counselors where a person will say, I want this person and this person and this person. I don't want my daughter to come, because we don't get along, and I don't want her to be part of this process. And that's perfectly okay, and we honor that. So there are lots of ways that the options counselor can assist the person, either in explaining to family members, you know, these are the people that have been invited, or just making sure that that person's voice is heard. It's all about them, their decision-making.
Great. Well, we're coming to a close now, if you can believe it. We've had a whole hour pass by, and we've had great conversation around person-centeredness within disability and aging services. I really appreciate Wendy and Terry joining me today to add to the conversation. Thank you for listening. Today we explored person-centered thinking in healthcare and human services. This is Stacey Starling. Remember, you can go to our show links on my Voice America host page. There you can like us on Facebook or follow me on Twitter or visit us at starlingcenter.org. We will also have a recording of today's show for you to listen to at a different time. And we'll have plenty of contact information where you can reach out to both Wendy Middleton of the Office of Services for the Aging and Terry Cady from Disability Network of Mid-Michigan, and you can review our frequently asked questions and the answers that they have provided. With that, thank you so much, and we'll join us next week and when we add to the conversation about healthcare reform and its impact on services for older adults and people with disabilities.
Thank you again for joining us this week for Murmuration, Critical Transitions, and Transformation. Please join your host, Stacey Starling, for another edition next Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, 12 noon Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. We'll answer more of your questions next week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.